welcome to CatastropheCast.com. My name is Walter, and the subject that we're going to talk about today is the 1964 Good Friday earthquake in Alaska. Now, I have to say that I actually hold this a bit close to my heart because I actually consider myself Alaskan. Although I was born in the South, in the Southern United States, early on, we actually moved to Alaska. So I grew up in Alaska, I went to school in Alaska, and the 1964 earthquake is probably one of the biggest events from Alaskan history. So it is something that is near and dear to my heart. Every school kid knows, and you know, they will find out about it, investigate it. It'll be in one of their classes as they go through school. And every tourist that actually still comes to Alaska still asks about the earthquake. So I want to talk about this, but first, a little bit of information about it. Whenever there is a big earthquake somewhere in the world, like the recent Haiti earthquake from a couple of years back, that was a 7.0, I believe, and killed scores of people, destroyed scores of houses. The thing is, they will often, whoever is being interviewed, compare that earthquake to other earthquakes from our recorded history. The Alaskan 1964 earthquake was actually very, very strong. It's the second strongest earthquake in our recorded history. Different websites, when you go to investigate this, will have the magnitude on the Richter scale for the earthquake somewhere between 9.1 and 9.3. The USGS actually says that it was a 9.2 on the Richter scale, so that's what we're going to stick with. We're going to go with the USGS because that's their job. The only stronger earthquake than the 1964 Good Friday earthquake was a earthquake that also happened in the 60s. It was 1960 to be exact, and it happened in Chile. It was a 9.5 on the Richter scale. So much larger when you consider that a 9.1 is actually 10 times worse than a 9.0. So a 9.5 was huge. So the fact that both of these earthquakes were in the 9-point range, I mean, that is just amazing in itself. The difference, though, with the Good Friday earthquake and other earthquakes is there were only around 130 lives that were lost, and not all of them were in the state of Alaska. So that is a good thing in that an earthquake of such magnitude as a 7.0, like in Haiti, can kill thousands and thousands of people. So it was actually, any loss of life is bad, but only losing 130 people, that is better than what it could have been. And there were also extenuating circumstances that actually kept that number lower than what it could have been. So before we get into it a little bit more on Alaska itself, Alaska stretches along a great deal of the what's called the Pacific Ring of Fire. I'll have a picture of this on catastrophecast.com so you can see it. The Ring of Fire, it's so called that because the ring itself actually is where 81% of the world's earthquakes occur. That's huge right there. And it also happens to have 75% of the active and dormant volcanoes that exist. When you look at the Ring of Fire, you'll actually see that, I mean, Alaska, everyone knows, is huge. If you put the overlaid the state of Alaska with the entire continental United States, you could see that it would almost touch from coast to coast because of how far spread out Alaska can be. So that huge stretch of land, actually, you know, it sitting there, that's why a lot of earthquakes occur in the area. The state of Alaska and most of the U.S. West Coast are on what is called the North American Plate, and it's just where the Pacific Plate and the North American Plate meet. So that's where your earthquakes come from, these two plates, you know, bumping up against each other. As the Pacific Plate goes under the North American plate. And we know it can happen slowly and barely noticeable, or in the case of the Good Friday earthquake, it can happen massively and be felt for hundreds and hundreds of miles. And when you're looking at a map of the tectonic plates on planet Earth, you'll actually see that not only is the U.S. West Coast, including Alaska and Western BC, not only do they exist right on the side of the North American plate where it meets the Pacific plate, there's also a couple of other smaller plates in the area as well. Northern Washington State and part of British Columbia are also subject to movements of the Juan de Fuca plate. And there's also, of course, earthquakes and volcanoes in Mexico and Central America. And those are also part of the Cocos plate. So that's why. So to get into the earthquake itself, the earthquake hit at 5:36 p.m. Now, I said earlier that the timing of the earthquake itself helped save lives, and this is why. There were many, many buildings destroyed because of the earthquake itself, of course. The thing is, if you were to look at some of the schools just did not make it at all. There was one elementary school, and that was actually called Government Hill Grade School. That actually slid down a hilled area, so the entire building was lost. If this would have happened 5 hours earlier, that school would have been filled, and there would have been kids that were killed. I mean, just countless. I think that there would probably have been, you know, many, many more deaths, and most of the deaths would have been children. So the state of Alaska has always been subject to these earthquakes, you know, but this one was different because, of course, of the massive size of it. But not just the size. Not many people know this, but the earthquake itself lasted almost 4 minutes long. Now, if you've ever been in an earthquake, you know that it will last somewhere short, a shorter period of time. You know, you'll get a jolt, and then you'll kind of figure out what's going on, and then the earthquake subsides, done with. But that's just not what happened. For almost 4 minutes, the earth moved throughout the state, you know, around the state of Alaska, and the destruction was just absolutely massive. Now, back in the 1980s, I actually used to volunteer at the visitor center in Anchorage, and I worked with a nice little lady who was around, I'd say, you know, late 70s at the time. Her name was Inez Gilman, and Inez was a longtime Alaskan. And, you know, we got to talking about Alaskan history because it was something that just fascinated me. And Inez told me about her experience during the earthquake. I wish I had a recording of this. Inez actually did recently pass in 2002, but she had a wonderful life. And she said one of the biggest things of her life in Alaska was the 1964 earthquake. So she started to tell me the story. So she goes, okay, so I'm sitting in my living room, and all of a sudden the earthquake hits. So I get up, and I go over to stand in the doorway, because that's what I had always been told. When an earthquake hits, go stand in the doorway. So she said she was scared for that first 30 seconds. You know, she's standing in the doorway, and the whole building is shaking. Her house is just shaking massively. And then after 30 seconds or so, she said she got used to it. And then the earthquake kept going and going. She said after another 30 seconds, she actually got tired of it. She was tired of standing in the doorway. You know, her nervousness and being scared of the earthquake actually was let go because she was actually just getting tired of it. So she said she waited in about another 20 seconds, so that would be about a minute and a half into the earthquake, and she said, I'm tired of this. I've had enough, and went and sat on her sofa. So she sat down for the last, 90 seconds of, actually it was more than 90 seconds of the earthquake. You know, almost another 2.5 minutes would have been the entire length of the earthquake. And she says she just wrote it out on her sofa because it was a big earthquake and she was somewhat scared, but she was also tired of standing in the doorway. So that to me was just a beautiful story that she had shared with me. Not beautiful, but just a funny anecdote about what happened during the 1964 earthquake. So when you actually get down to it, Inez's house, it was not destroyed, but she had quite a bit of damage. The good thing, if I can say again, a good thing happened, is Alaska, as everyone knows, is not as densely populated. So there was a lot of damage that was done in Anchorage, and it accounted for quite a few of the deaths that actually occurred because of the earthquake itself. I believe Anchorage had around 10 of those deaths. The JCPenney store in downtown was completely destroyed, so they had to tear it down, rebuild it. As I said before, Government Hill Grade School, kind of liquefied, went over not the ground liquefied, and the entire school was destroyed. Anchorage High School, which is now known as West Anchorage High School, or just West High School, it was severely damaged. There were, the second floor of the main building was completely damaged. Most of downtown 4th Avenue, and that's where the visitor center and quite a lot of businesses, that area had just some of the most massive loss and gain of altitude of, and I say altitude in the fact of the 4th Avenue Theater had, of course, a marquee outside that showed, this is playing, yada, yada, yada. That marquee, which was 30 feet off the ground, was actually at sidewalk level. The building had sunk that far down into the ground. So 4th Avenue, that area, is somewhere some of the massive plus and minus of where the earth finally came to rest. That has some of the most distinctive areas. The there was an area called Turnagain by the Sea, and I don't want to sound snotty, but it was where the hoity-toity people lived. It was kind of the, every big city has the, this is the country club area. This is where the rich people live. Well, they had actually built their entire community of Turnagain by the Sea on this, kind of silty area that was right on the inlet, Cook Inlet. That area was just completely destroyed. Those houses were lost. It was insane. Most of the pictures that you would see when you Google the 1964 earthquake are of Turnagain by the Sea. It was just a massive, just destructive area of houses. Anchorage International Airport, which now is one of the busiest airports for cargo because it's a great stopping point between Asia and the United States when you're bringing in different things, different trade goods. That airport actually lost its control tower. The control tower actually toppled over, and the sole air traffic controller that was in the tower at the time did lose his life. Now, as I mentioned earlier, I actually used to volunteer in Anchorage at the Convention and Visitors Bureau in the little log cabin downtown. It's a beautiful little place if you ever get to go. A lot of people who would come up would actually ask, how can I see the effects of the 1964 earthquake, even though at that time it was 25 years later. One of the best things that you could actually do would be to walk down about two blocks to the west, or to the east, and you'll see the 4th Avenue Mall. I'm not sure if it's still called that or not, or the Sunshine Mall. It's one of those. The 4th Avenue side of the mall is at street level, of course, so you can walk up to it, you walk in. The Third Avenue side of the mall is actually a couple dozen feet below the Fourth Avenue side. You can see, like I said before, the marquee of the Fourth Avenue Theater was 30 feet up, ended up at sidewalk level. The Fourth Avenue side of that mall is at street level. The Third Avenue side is about 30 feet below. So that's, you can't actually see the destruction, but you can actually see the physical manifestation of that earthquake, in that there is such a huge difference between the height of Third Avenue and Fourth Avenue in Anchorage. They did turn Turning by the Sea into a park area, and you can actually go see that. You can't see any of the destruction, but you can actually see what happened. There's tons of hills there now and everything, where the area used to be flat. And I actually heard from a relative that they were talking about building in that area again. I have no idea why. Why would you even try to do that if you know that the area is basically silt and you would lose your house at any type of earthquake there? So that is kind of what happened in Anchorage. Now, of course, even though Alaska is sparsely populated, that's not where all the damage was limited to. There were a ton of coastal cities that were damaged by the earthquake. But beyond that, you know, Seward was damaged, Valdez was damaged. All these places were damaged because of this massive earthquake. But the coastal cities actually got hit worse by the tsunami. 9.2 earthquake on the coast is going to have a large tsunami that's going to hit. So the tsunami is where almost all of the deaths came from. Like I said before, I believe there were around 10 to 15 deaths actually attributed to the earthquake. The rest of that 130 or so deaths all came because of the tsunami. That town of Seward, their bay was basically destroyed, and you know, huge boats from the bay were swept from where they were up, you know, almost two blocks inland. The town of Valdez, it was almost completely destroyed. It was just, you know, the earthquake and then the tsunami, it just did a huge amount of damage. But the thing is, that tsunami is not, it didn't just affect people in Alaska. In a small town in British Columbia, there were actually 55 homes that were swept away. There were three kids on a state beach in Oregon. The parents and kids were camping on the beach, and by the time the tidal wave got to the crescent, to their area in Oregon, the kids were swept away. They were killed. By the time the tidal wave got all the way down to Crescent City, California, which is just below the Oregon border, that tidal wave was still over 15 feet high, and there were 12 people that were killed when they were hit by the tidal wave on the beach in Crescent City, California. I believe they were camping there as well. You just think, if you were to fly, it would take about, you know, 5 hours to get from California, basically the California border, up to Anchorage. Can you imagine what, you know, you wouldn't think that there would be any, you know, any damage or anything that would come from an earthquake in Alaska that would damage you all the way in California. But those 12 people, I mean, that was huge. There were 12 people killed in California because of this. The tsunami hit San Francisco, where it damaged a whole bunch of yachts. The same thing in Hilo, Hawaii. And actually, all the way over to Japan, there was a pearl farm that actually was damaged because of the tsunami. there's, if you go through and read, I believe it's the USGS site, they said that it actually even rattled wells in Africa. And that's just mind-blowing, the fact that, an earthquake can actually affect a well in Africa. You just think about that, and it, you know, it's a world away, and it still had effects. There were other things. Of course, there were lives, you know, that were lost because of this earthquake, but there were lives that were changed. As I mentioned before, the city of Valdez, they, you know, the entire city was not destroyed, but a massive chunk of it was. What happened 3 years later was the city of Valdez picked up and moved inland some. They used to be on a more silty area. The entire community moved it more inward and reestablished their community on a bedrock area that was higher. So they were had a higher elevation, and they were on bedrock. So if something happened like this again, they would be protected. There was a small community, about 70 people, on Chinega Island. It's a small island that had this Native American community, and they lost a third of their population in the earthquake and subsequent tidal wave. After that, they decided to go ahead and move away from Chinega Island, and they now live in a newly established, after the 1964 earthquake, Chinega Village on the mainland. So it's just mind-blowing that this earthquake caused so much damage. I believe the value, if you looked at it today, was, if you converted 1964 dollars to dollars to 2012, I believe it was $25 to $30 billion in damages. That is, it's not as huge as other accidents, but it is still a very, very large number. If you ever get up to Alaska, I would suggest there's two places to visit that you can find out more information about the earthquake. One is actually there's a small Experience Alaska Theater, and they actually have, or at least the last time I was there, they have moved to another area since then. They actually had a moving theater, so you actually experienced what a 9.2 earthquake would feel like, and you would see the destruction from the pictures and tape that existed from 1964. So you could see actually what the damage looked like. The Anchorage Museum, and they actually have a link online to some of the pictures of some of this, has several pictures of the damage, and they actually still own several of the girders from the JCPenney building, and you can just see how they were almost like snapped, just as if they were just butter and not steel. So if you ever get a chance to get up there, you know, those are two places to go. But also the Anchorage Museum, and I will put a link up to this, has a picture collection from 1964. The only thing is, there's only 5 pictures, and that doesn't tell the whole story. So what I would suggest is, you know, if you go into Google or Yahoo and you put in 1964 Good Friday Earthquake and then click on images and actually just go through the list, you should actually be able to see a lot of what happened. Not only in Anchorage, but in Valdez, the abandoned village, you know, now that the Chinega Island is abandoned, you should be able to see all this, including ships that were taken from the bay and thrown 2 blocks inland. So I really would suggest going in and looking at this. So that's it. That was the 1964 earthquake. I want to, one little note, apologize again about the delay in between podcasts. It's just, you know, work and vacation got in the way. Work was very, very crazy. And then I actually managed to go on vacation, a little spot in Costa Rica, which happened actually to be 50 miles from where they just had a 7.2 earthquake. Luckily, you know, we were about 50 miles from the epicenter. We actually didn't get there during the earthquake itself. We showed up 2 days later. But luckily, there was actually very, very little damage in the area where we were at. If you look at Tamarindo, Costa Rica, and you go about 50 miles to the southeast, that would be where this earthquake was done, or this earthquake occurred. Luckily, like I said, there was very, very little damage, but there were quite a few aftershocks. So you get to your hotel, you know, for your long-awaited vacation, and what happens? But boom, aftershock. So I do want to apologize, but I'm going to try and get back onto schedule here, releasing a new podcast every 2 to 3 weeks. If you have something that you want to be covered as a podcast subject, please let me know. I would love to hear from you. There's two ways to get a hold of me. The easiest is, of course, email. You can email me at podcast@catastrophecast.com or just go to the website at www.catastrophecast.com and there is a contact us link. I'm also probably going to put up a sticky post, so something that's always there on the main page that says, what would you like to have covered? Let me know. So choose one of those ways to get a hold of me, and I'd love to hear from you. Love to find out what you think about the podcast, what you want covered, anything else that strikes your fancy. And as of that, I want to wish you a great weekend, and thanks for listening.